This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. What's happening? It's Thursday morning. Busy week, sure. Almost the end of January.
Hurrah.
Take a blink and there it is. It's done. First month of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Today.
What today is?
Is payday.
Oh.
Do you know how many poor...
Yes. Say that again, girl.
Desperately how poor many people. Po people. Are relieved today that January has finally come to an end.
Well, out of all the paydays, January is like the comrades. People get to the end of it, they're like, they're dying, they're bleeding.
This is so sobbing.
True. So they weren't even poor, they were po.
Listen,
they can't even afford their own arms.
I mean, after the regrets of December, whew, a lot of people are going to be relieved today.
Jesus. Yeah, I know what you mean. I just don't know that all that money's going to come straight in and go straight out again. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but it's like being washed. You know, at least you feel cleaner for a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. Listen, I think that a lot of people are taking some strain because of December and all the rest of it. But also, it's just like there's not a lot of money around. I noticed how quiet the shops and things have been for the last 2 weeks. Quiet. There's not a lot going on. Yeah, people are like, I'll just live on those old biscuits I got in the pantry. That'll just have to last.
And shopping online.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. People, I hear it more and more nowadays.
Mm.
Your conversations, they go, oh, yeah, I got it online. It's like becoming a saying that people are getting more and more comfortable with.
Well, it's bound to happen, right? I mean, ultimately,
no, malls are dreadful. I mean, malls go where you try to lose children. You know, it's not like a great place. You go, oh, I can't wait to go to the mall this weekend.
No. It used to be like that, though. People used to do that for entertainment. They'd go to the mall.
I'd just love to know what the uptake is from banks and financial institutions around this time of the year with loans, with trying to change payments.
They are handing them out left, right, and center.
Oh, yes.
And tying you up in interest-rich loans.
So, fine, malls are empty because everyone is at their local branches and online banking.
Yeah, for
like, sure. Please, sir, can I get some more?
Yeah, definitely.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, the loan sharks and the machonisas, their business peaks at this time of the year.
They're having a great time. I'm not complaining.
If you're waiting for Justice Malala today, he's on Mondays for the next couple of weeks because he's away Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So we thought we would rather than not have the live burning platform, we just move it to a Monday. So I think that's going very well. There's lots of stuff to get into. We'll talk about some of the stuff in the news in a little bit. I'm hopefully back on the mend. I went to the doctor yesterday. I just decided enough.
Oh.
I felt my head was going to explode. And I don't know what it is. It might be... See, it could be one of two things. Either I'm just old and what used to be a sinus situation is now much worse. Right?
Right.
Could be that. Or I've been... sorting out a whole lot of paving at home and sort of painting the sealer on it. And it's like those fumes don't help. So I can't help thinking that that might be something that aggravated the situation.
Have you got Grouts' throat?
I don't know what it is. It's just bad. It's really... yesterday I felt horrendous. So eventually I just went to the doctor and he's like, yeah, he gives me four different kinds of medicine.
Ah, the healer.
Yeah, beat you with medication.
That was great, though. I got home, I took it all.
Does any of it make you drowsy?
No.
But then it's not fun.
No. I'd love to have some of that, but then there's stuff to be done. You know, you can't get all drowsy on the job. And on Tuesday when I missed the show, I even came in here afterwards because I had some meetings I had to do. So there's no rest for the wicked. We've had such a busy January here. It's been insane. Since I got back, it feels like yesterday that I got back. It's just been non-stop.
Mm.
So people are keen and eager to get going this year.
I'm pretty sure, though, that medical practitioners dispense more drugs than is necessary. I'm pretty sure of it.
Oh, yeah, I reckon.
They peddle that stuff.
You're sounding like one of those people who say, like, yeah, it's medical... business at the end of the day. No, they're there to make money.
Like, you go in for a routine check, the next thing you're leaving with 500 million drugs.
Isn't that
Why?
Comforting, though?
No, I'm sure those guys peddle that stuff and you don't really need it.
You think? I'll take it all. I don't care.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look, I have a drug problem, but I'm four. He gave you four.
Yeah.
I.
You don't think he needed to?
I don't. Well, no.
It seems a bit excessive. Like, you're not dying. Granted, you're not feeling so great, but four, that means, well, this one might not work. That one I'm not entirely sure of, so let's just go with those ones.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, much more exciting than me and my medication, Matsela Koko in Parliament yesterday trying to defend himself.
Mm.
That's a Eskom person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was on the Eskom. What was he? What was he? CEO? Chairman? I can't remember. Anyway. Let's just see. He was former acting CEO for Eskom, you know, acting. He says he won't quit, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
For the sake of patriotism. I mean, do me a fucking favor.
Yeah.
This is a guy who was staying in Dubai when the Guptas were paying for everything. So he says in Parliament, he goes, I've never met the Guptas. I've never seen any of these people in these pictures. I mean, he's just, there's no shame. And then he's the one who also gave his stepdaughter like a billion-rand deal.
Oh, yes.
To, I don't know, to market Eskom or something. Do you remember? Anyway, what a piece of shit this guy is. Really. And I'm so glad that all these state capture people are being called to book now for what they've done. Because they thought they were going to get away with this. They were pinching their chubby flanks every morning going, I cannot believe how lucky I am. And now suddenly the chickens are coming home to roost. They're actually getting their just desserts. And it couldn't happen to a nicer group of people.
Mm.
Huh? These people were stealing your and my and everybody else in South Africa's money. They were putting it into their own pockets. They were sending it to the pockets of people like the Guptas with their Tegeta coal deal that they did. And they thought, well, we can get away with this. Let's just keep this going. And Jacob Zuma said to them, don't worry, I'm going to be in power. And then after that, it's in Nkosazana. So we'll just keep these wheels turning. Don't panic, guys. I got this under control.
Do you know what I would like to know? You know how when you're on the road and then there's a traffic incident and then somebody breaks a rule of the road to overcome the traffic incident, and then slowly but surely people start to follow suit, and then you think, oh well, if they're doing it, I'll do it too.
It's this idea that, you know, if you have a broken window in a neighborhood, the whole neighborhood starts to deteriorate because people go, oh well, that window's broken, so if I steal that or if I break that door down, no real issue.
But I would love to know how many people in government started off with good intentions, and then because everybody else
was stealing,
was you know, being corrupt, they thought, oh well, if Gareth is doing it, then I'm going to cash in on a big payday too. Yeah, I would genuinely love to know how many people started off with good intentions.
I reckon very little, like 10%. Seriously, I'm up trying to sound like a dickhead. I reckon, I mean, why? Why do you want to get into politics? It's purely so you can just steal, pervert, and just have things. I just can't see it. Like, where in society are we taught to be humanitarian, all that kind of stuff? Politics is a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see politics being marketed anything else but that.
For many people, it's the only place they could be employed.
That too. And because they've got an uncle or a Gupta or whatever, then that's how they get in. Like at school, did we ever get taught about politics, about how we can make a difference in community? I don't remember that.
Donald Trump, I know we're jumping around a lot here. Donald Trump says this morning, 4 hours ago, he goes, I'll soon be heading to Davos, Switzerland to tell the people how great America is and is doing. Our economy is now booming, and with all I'm doing, we'll only get better. Our country is finally winning again.
Is that a tweet from him?
That's a tweet.
There was a line there that I
imagine how excited the people in Davos are to hear how big he's
all
winning.
That I'm doing, he says.
Right.
Mm. Well, guys, we could throw a shade at him all day, but what is Cyril actually doing? Cause I saw some great tweets in the last couple of days.
Well, isn't he in Davos trying to do the same thing?
Well, exactly. So basically, I saw this tweet, and it was like, screw property ownership, and then, oh, in Davos, your investment's safe with us. You know, it's like stuff like this. It's like, well, we've stolen all the money in the last 10 years, but can we have some more? Everything's going to be okay this time.
Well, I mean, the Rand certainly seems to believe that everything's going to be okay, because I saw a lot of people raving about how the Rand is being resuscitated.
It was under 12 Rand yesterday to the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you go to Davos going, obviously after Donald speaks, you know, like, you guys must come to our country. We're so great. But like, when you go through some of these issues, like the land claim thing, anybody in Davos is going to ask that question, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to say, what is this? What's the land situation?
Yeah, so you want us to invest, but this looks a bit rocky.
Well, apparently he's rolling out the red carpet for foreign investors in South Africa, and people are saying that this is the hot market for 2018, because we have been trailing behind the other sort of developing economies as a place to send your money. It is a good place in terms of interest rate returns, in terms of investment returns, so if he can convince people they're not going to be pilfering money and that your investments here are secure, we could see a massive capital inflow, which would help this country enormously, enormously. So if Cyril gets it 20% right,
that'll
be great. It
just seems strange.
And I'm not one of those people who's overly excited, because I do believe that, you know, he's playing a very hypocritical political game. But then that's what politicians do.
Mm.
Is they speak with forked tongue. They tell you one thing and then they tell investors another thing. I mean, you know, it's so cynical, because here's what it boils down to. I think Cyril is a rich man. He's a very rich man. He's done very, very well. He's got lots and lots of money. He's now president of the country, so his ego is even more inflated. I think he's on his way to doing probably a few good things for the country. But along the way, he has to placate the masses, right? And the masses always get to suck the hind tit, because the masses walk into the room and Cyril goes, oh, we're going to reform things, we're going to give you land, we're going to change the country, radical economic transformation, blah, blah, blah. None of that ever happens. It didn't happen under Jacob Zuma, who said he was a friend of the people. It didn't happen under Thabo Mbeki, he said he was a friend of the people. Why? Because these guys are so connected with all the rich people and all of their friends, and they're so busy trying to sort out macroeconomic stuff, some of the time, not Jacob Zuma, that the people must just hang on. You know, just wait, guys, we'll get to you eventually. And so let's just look at it for what it is. He's going to give lip service to the poor. That's what happens to the poor. They get lip service. That's why they don't want to be poor anymore. No one wants to be poor.
Well, it's not fun.
No. But Cyril's going to keep saying what he needs to the poor, and that's what politicians do. They lie to poor people all the time because they know there's no blowback. Like, all that'll happen is those poor people won't vote next time.
But then they will, because there's all like the shirts and the hats and the sandwiches.
Well,
and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you can always buy a poor person's loyalty, and I know that's a terrible thing to say, but the truth is,
no, but it's true,
when you've got nothing, you'll take anything, and people will. People will sell their vote. If their vote's worth something and they need money and they need a livelihood or even a promise of hope, they'll do whatever they have to get it.
Well, that's exactly it, is that it's, if you're desperate, then you can be exploited, you know, and it's very easy to sit here and be very judgmental of the desperate. But if you've never been desperate, you don't know what's at stake.
That's exactly right. Hey, I've got to play something for you, talking about the desperately poor of the world.
Okay.
I mean, I have to explain a little bit, because it has to do with like gumballs. You know those little gumballs? Almost like the size of a tumble.
Okay.
Little colored gumballs. So there's this guy who tries to explain immigration in America and the desperately poor, and how taking in 1 million immigrants every year, which is what America does, is not going to help the situation at all. Let me just see if I can get this up here for you. This is interesting. This guy called Roy Beck, he takes gumballs, and he says each gumball represents 1 million people. All right.
Say that mass immigration into the United States can help reduce world poverty. Is that true? Well, no, it's not. And let me show you why. This gumball represents the 1 million legal immigrants that the United States has taken every year on average since 1990. Now, who in the world deserves our humanitarian compassion? The World Bank has one measure of the desperately poor of the world. They make less than $2 a day. And how many people make less than $2 a day in the world? Well, let's start with Africa. In Africa alone, there are 650 million people.
That's 650
gumballs. Who make less than $2 a day. 650 million. And in India, another 890 million people, desperately poor. China adds another 480 million people, making less than $2 a day. And unfortunately, the rest of Asia has a heartbreaking 810 million people.
That's phenomenal, right?
Who the World Bank says make less than $2 a day. And finally, there's 105 million of Latin America's population that are desperately poor. All told, the World Bank says there are 3 billion people in the world. 3 billion people who are desperately poor, making less than $2 a day. That's 3,000 gumballs.
Isn't that incredible?
It's frightening.
I mean, that number is just insane. It's 3 billion people who are desperately poor in the world. How do you even begin to address that problem? But listen to where he takes it.
And every year, we take a million and suggest that we've somehow made a humanitarian difference. Of course, we don't pull our immigrants from these desperately poor populations, do we? These people are too poor, too sick, too disconnected to make it here as immigrants. We tend to pull our immigrants out of the better off poor of the world. And Mexico tends to define the type of immigrant that we bring here because the plurality of people come from Mexico. And Mexico is poor. How many people in the world live in countries that have average incomes lower than that of Mexico? And the World Bank tells us that that number is these 3 billion plus another 2.6 billion people.
Wow.
5.6 billion people in the world who live in countries with average incomes below that of Mexico.
Isn't that incredible?
That's 5,600 gumballs. And so what is it that the elites are telling us? They're telling us that when we take this 1 million immigrants, that we somehow or another are tackling world poverty. And we have to do it regardless of the effect on our unemployed, the working poor, the most vulnerable members of our society, regardless of the effect on our natural resources. Even if we went by the most radical proposals in Washington, which are to actually double our immigration to 2 million a year, which would totally overwhelm our physical, natural, and social infrastructures, we couldn't make a noticeable difference. And we may be really hurting the impoverished people of the world because the million that we do take are among the most energetic, often the better educated, certainly the most dissatisfied people that if they did not immigrate would be the agents for change to improve the lot of all the people in these countries.
You see, that's an interesting thing. You can't really stop the flow of people in and out of places because people are looking for opportunities and they're trying to get away from disasters and, you know, they're trying to make a life for their children and all that kind of thing. So people are always going to move around and they will always move to places where they think there's more opportunity and away from places where they think there is none. But you've got to understand what he's doing here, and visually I'm trying to explain it to you. He has these towers of cylinders full of gumballs that represent the 5.8 billion people who are living under the average income of a Mexican. And he's saying America's taking one. He takes one little ball, he drops it in a glass. 1 million people every year as legal immigrants. And he's saying immigration is not going to fix world poverty. And he's probably right. I mean, that's quite something, right? Those numbers are just unbelievable. And then he says that the better sort of people who could be the agents of change in those countries where there's such desperate poverty are the ones who want to get out. Because they're like, why should I stay here and minimize my opportunity to create a new future for me and my children? Get out. Let's go to America.
Those are the agents of change.
Yeah, they're the people who can make things better in their own countries.
Ah.
Yeah. So they're not giving up on their countries, on India and on so many African countries, all the places that Donald Trump calls a shithole.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? And just by scale, if you look at what he's telling you here, is that there's no difference. If you take 1 million immigrants from shitty places in the world and you let them into a place like America, it makes no difference. It's a drop in the ocean. And just the size and scale of this with these little gumballs suddenly illustrated to me how enormous the problem is.
Mm. And how we should be shifting our perspective.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. About all of this stuff. About where people go, about what they do, the decisions they make. That's why a country that has net immigration, in other words, has more people who want to get in than who want to get out. Those are the successful countries in the world, obviously. It's like a shop that's got a huge crowd of customers outside and you just don't have enough items for the customers. It's a very popular shop. It's going to do very well. A shop which is chasing people out because they no one wants to be in that shop anyway. That's obviously the kind of shop like Angola or Puerto Rico or Venezuela or, you know, China. I mean, China has net emigration. So the best countries to be in are not the ones where everybody's trying to leave. It's the ones where everybody's trying to get in, obviously. And that's why I always say to people who have ideological arguments, well, there's one-way traffic out of Cuba. If Cuba's such a great place, how come nobody's getting on a boat in Miami and trying to sneak into Cuba? How come nobody's trying to sneak across the border from North Korea or into North Korea from South Korea? There's only one-way traffic. People from North Korea want to get the hell out wherever they can and try to get into another country, China, South Korea, wherever. That's because those countries are horrible places to live. Anyway, it's just an interesting video. So in case you were wondering, I thought a very, very smart, interesting presentation by a guy called Roy Beck, R-O-Y-B-E-C-K, about immigrants and emigrants and how it all works. Let's get into some headlines. Mubs has got a quick look at the five things you need to know today. Where do we begin?
We'll begin with Zimbabwe, where the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, yesterday denied that the Mugabe family has been granted immunity, rather saying that his administration will do everything possible to ensure that the former first family live in peace and undisturbed.
Oh, they are going to live in peace?
Well, yes. I mean, the man is 93 years old. What do you want?
Is this like another one of those we can't humiliate Jacob Zuma stories?
Yeah. It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. But, I mean, again, you know.
You're never too old to be flogged. That's what the Romans taught us.
Robert Mugabe is far too old. And then the former health MEC, Katane Mahlangu, yesterday during the Life Esidimeni hearings, is saying that no health officials anticipated the deaths of patients.
Oh, sure.
During the project. At least 143 patients died in the tragedy, and part of what the MEC said was that I do not think at the time anyone in the department thought that there was going to be loss of life. Certainly not me. I do not think any one of us sat and said this was going to result in a loss of life. It is regrettable, she said, that people have lost loved ones.
Oh, it's regrettable, is it, Kaidani?
It's the unintended consequences of implementing policies or the decision incorrectly.
We need accountability. You know, in Japan, when Mattel, I think it was some Japanese toy company. They put out a bunch of toys with lead paint on them. And I think one kid licked the paint and, I don't know, developed a problem. The boss of Mattel killed himself, or whatever this company was. The boss of this Japanese toy company, he killed himself. He took personal responsibility and said, I have fucked up so badly. There's this kid who could die or did die or whatever. I'm out of here. I've ruined another person's life. I should take responsibility for that. And he killed himself. This woman, this is the person responsible for the death of over 100 people. She's taking no responsibility. She's like, oh, it's regrettable. I mean, what a thing to say to the people whose relatives are dead, who are sitting in front of you. What an absolutely callous, unkind, uncharitable thing to say to those relatives. She should be whole. And Robert Mugabe getting treated in peace and comfort in his old age, like he's a hero. and all these people in the ANC are saying Jacob Zuma should be sent out to pasture and be put out of our way so that he can get on with his life, and that, you know, we must forgive him and let's not humiliate him. There is no sense of accountability. And then we wonder why we keep being fucked, because we're so forgiving. Every day someone comes along and takes advantage of us. Eventually it's got to result in accountability, or it's going to keep resulting in us being taken advantage of. So, you know, we ask why everything's so unfair in the world, why some people seem to be doing great and other people not. Well, it's because those people who are not might just be allowing themselves to be used by the likes of Edani Mahlangu, who's absolutely not the sort of person who you would think of first when you were thinking of excellence. She's absolutely not the sort of person that you would want to employ in your business. She has no sense of personal responsibility, clearly. And people are dead as a result of her inaction or action. That's what this whole hearing is for. Either way, she's just like, oh, well, it's regrettable. What a thing to say. Imagine someone killed your mother and their decision led to your mother's death. And then she popped round to your house for a cup of tea and said to you, it's regrettable what happened to your mom.
Jeez.
Do you think she thinks she can get away with this just because these were mentally ill people or because these were poor people? Is that why she thinks she can get away with this?
Well, do you think she's really even thinking that far, or just trying to save her behind?
She's trying to save her behind. Yeah, that's all she cares about.
You make a good point. It's like, I don't think there was ever consideration about these people being equal. It was always like, well, you know, they're the special people.
No, we need to get them into cheaper places and we can pocket the money.
Exactly. No one cares what happens to them.
Let's put them out of the Life Estimeni Hospital into these NGOs, which have obviously all constituted themselves to make some money. And screw them. Screw these people. This is appalling. How come the... why am I the only one who's been upset about Life Estimeni?
You're not the only one.
No, on this... No. Certainly not. But I mean, this has been bothering me since it happened.
It's a Americana of sorts.
Well, I mean, it's been bothering a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't hear any outrage about this.
No, there's plenty
of... Is there outrage?
Of course there is.
Good. All right, I feel better. Thanks.
All right, so a lot of people calling bullshit on the DA, as Musi Maimane yesterday was speaking at a media briefing with the theme hashtag defeat day zero. They're trying to outline the action plan for the day when taps run dry. Your people upset yesterday.
It's quite a step from defeat Helen Patricia the Little.
Well, so, priorities, Ben.
That's two great hashtags in 1 week.
Priorities. So this comes after the deputy mayor, Ian Nielsen, announced that actually day zero has been brought forward. Initially, it was going to be on April the 22nd, but in fact, it's now April the 12th. Mm. On the 1st of February,
it's going to be April 1st pretty soon. Well, and then we'll see the jokes because we can't take life seriously.
Well, next week, Thursday, February the 1st, stricter water restrictions are going to come into effect. The six dams supplying Cape Town with water are currently at 26.9%. When those levels reach 13.5%, that is when the taps are going to be turned off.
But don't you find it strange they're waiting until the 1st of February to have stricter water things? Like, guys, nothing's changing. Yesterday, probably better.
Honestly, what I observed on social media yesterday, like, nobody had time for the DA yesterday. Every single one, from journalists to Cape Townians to even outsiders, were just critical of everything that was being said at this media briefing yesterday. So, yeah, a lot of criticism that they're facing in terms of how everything has been handled and how it is currently being handled. And you're right, Ben. Why are they waiting for April the 1st or whatever?
Why were they always waiting? Oh, you know, we'd have to take it to level 5. There shouldn't be levels. It's screwed or not screwed. And they've been screwed for quite some time now.
And nobody...
Who are we kidding here?
Nobody seems to know what these numbers and letters mean, like level 6B or level 5A, or, well, like, we don't, there isn't a chart for us to, like, be able to figure out how screwed we are.
It's one or the other. And
Ben, if you ever ran for public office, I'd vote for you.
I'd be assassinated, yeah.
Oh.
No, of course they would, because people wouldn't be able to make money out of these things. People are profiteering from all disasters in life. This whole structured level 1, 2, 3, 5B, F, whatever. It's just, people are profiting from this. I'm pretty sure, again, maybe I'm sounding too cynical again, but in years to come, we'll find out people have been profiteering from this thing.
You think?
And we've been held in the dark again.
I just think it's a total failure of government, and this is proof that important resources should not be controlled by the state.
There's a great saying that we are all like mushrooms. We get fed shit and get kept in the dark.
Oh, ooh, that is brilliant.
Matt, I tell you what. Said by Sia this
that
morning.
Is I tell you what, this, brilliant.
This water crisis is another example of this.
That is so good.
All right, is there anything else?
Well, lastly, you would be forgiven for maybe assuming the worst yesterday when you saw hashtag Winnie Madikizela Mandela trending. Uh-oh. And that was because she was admitted to a Johannesburg hospital. A statement was released by the family saying that prior to going to the clinic on Sunday, she was uncomfortable and complaining about a loss of appetite. And upon admission, it was discovered that she had an infection that has affected her kidneys. But so soon after the announcement of Hugh Masekela's death, I'm pretty sure a lot of people saw that hashtag and immediately got a little bit scared. But, you know.
Okay, well, as long as she's all right.
You know.
We can't afford to lose her while this transition's going on. Jeez. All right, let's get into some sport with Ben. Let's see what's going on there. Ben, over to you. What do you got?
Well, it was a bit of a ding-dong day yesterday at the cricket at the Wanderers. The bell went ding, and then massive dong, Virat Kohli decided to bat first. His ego was basically cashing, writing checks that his batting order couldn't cash because they were 8 for 2. And it was a bowler's wicket. It always was going to be a bowler's wicket. Faf du Plessis said if he won the toss, he would have bowled too. Because it was very grassy, but it was also firmer underfoot than usual. And, to their credit, Pujara, who I think took 52 balls just to get off the mark. He and Kohli put up on a little stand. Look, the Proteas were giving them chances after chances. It was a terrible day in the field yesterday. But eventually, India were rolled out for 187. And this pitch does look... it's difficult to bat on. That is an understatement. It's very difficult, and they say that's going to become more difficult in this couple of days because what normally happens is that you get these indentations and little crevices, like kind of going in the first in the first day, and then when the pitch hardens up, the ball hits these little indentations, then it's going to do a lot of things off the seam or just off the ground anywhere.
Okay.
So 187, the Proteas then went into bat for a tricky little six over period. Unfortunately, Adam Markram, he was dismissed by Kumar. So both teams went in with a full seam attack, no spinners whatsoever. And, was this a good idea? Having five seamers is a very strange thing in Test cricket because by the time your fifth seamer comes on, the better ones are kind of fresh and ready to bowl again. So you think, is it really worth it? So Andile Petlekwaya was the fifth seamer and he did kind of release a bit of pressure early on. He did come back and get two wickets, so good for him. But either way, 187. I mean, what's a par score? I mean, Graham Smith was talking about it being 200, 220 is a decent score, and that is not great for Test cricket. I'm not saying it's bad for a viewer spectacle. I'm saying as a batting wicket, it is tough as all hell out there. So Proteas will resume on 6 for 1. Weather looking pretty good out today in Joburg as I look out the window, but tomorrow it is going to be rain, and a bit more rain, which sucks because tomorrow I'm actually going to the game. Anyway, I'm in a box. I'm not going to worry about that. I'm going to drink heavily.
You've got a plan.
I do have a plan. Australian Open. I told you it was getting exciting. Federer, he took a bit of a setback in his quarterfinal match, but then flew through. And you know what this now means here? Roger Federer will take on Hyung Chung in the semis. What an absolute fairy tale end to the Australian Open for Hyung Chung. Now, should I take him so lightly? Well, he beat that Sandringham guy, but now... The thing about Sandringham losing on the tennis court isn't actually the big story this week. Apparently, he's a devout Christian alt-right kind of person. Allegedly, okay, this has all been thrown around. So people, as he's now in the public eye, and this is how shit people are and media are, they started going through his tweets. No one knew this guy, right? He was an absolute nobody. So now everyone's going through his tweets and going, oh, hang on a second, this guy's... He's alt-right. He's really offensive. Apparently, back in 2015, he just said, Serena's behavior is disgusting in this match because she was having a tantrum or whatever. I mean, he probably meant nothing about it. No biggie. And then Serena even got on board saying, you know, this guy should apologize for his tweets and they're really offensive. But on one of the... Maybe this isn't funny, but I can't help laughing. Apparently, he was retweeting stuff about a debunked online conspiracy in 2016 which linked Hillary Clinton to a supposed child sex ring in Washington, in a Washington pizzeria.
Wow.
So he said to the press that, look, my tweets aren't always endorsements and I'm not alt-right. I just really, I'm sort of attracted to certain content on the internet, which makes him look like an alt-right weirdo. So this poor dude, he finally gets it right in tennis, but now his entire social being is dragged through the crap. So he said, okay, screw it. I'm deleting all my tweets. I'm making a fresh start.
Oh.
Alleged child sex ring with Hillary Clinton in a Washington pizzeria. How about that for a story?
That's a pretty big claim.
So, Federer versus Yong Chang, and then Cilic will take on Edmund. That will be your semi-finals for the men's. And then in the women's, Halep will take on Kerber. And right now, fascinating battle between Mertens and Wozniacki. Wozniacki took the first set 6-3. She was up in the second, but Mertens has come back. It's currently 6-5 if you are awake at 6:45 on Thursday morning. Then you watch that. It's very good. In football news, Arsenal, look at that. They won something. They won a semi-final of the Carabao League Cup. I don't know which one you've meant to call it. Let's go with League Cup. Yeah, Carabao Cup semi-final. They beat Chelsea 2-1. And it's a huge result for them. Of course, they lost Sanchez this week, and morale must have been a little bit down. But they beat Chelsea, and they will go on to meet Man City in the final. So that is a chance of silverware, which will then mean Arsene Wenger will have 23 more years in his contract if they win that one, despite losing everything. Speaking of losing everything, Boris Becker, well, he's looking for his old tennis trophies because he's bankrupt.
And oh, no.
He's been bankrupt for a while now.
So he's looking for the trophies so he can, you know, sell them?
Gareth, he's missing 14 trophies, apparently. So Boris back in the day, I mean, this oak was, he was so list just to pump anything going. He must have just gone to these places with these trophies going, look at me, I'm a tennis champion. Lost his mind and his pants and his trophies. So now, all of a sudden, he's old and he's bankrupt. He's saying, like, guys, has anyone seen my Wimbledon trophy? It's really, really sad. I mean, the guy's won so much in his career. And he was the world number one. He was an absolute sensation. At the age of 16 or 17, he won Wimbledon.
I remember him when he just started out. He was amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, he literally was throwing his cock around everywhere. And it's come back to bite him, basically.
Shame.
So he's asking anybody who's seen these trophies, please to return them to them because he needs the money so desperately. He needs to flog these trophies because his bankrupt case is so bad. And there's a lot of private bankers that want money out of Boris. And they kind of feel there's no way that he can pay them back. Of course, he was Djokovic's coach. Djokovic gave him the arse, though, so he's unemployed and no longer desirable to many people, all people.
I'm so sorry, Boris. What a sad terminus to have for your career.
If at some stage today you find a Olympic gold medal from 1992, a Wimbledon trophy from 85, 86, 89.
Yeah, just go through your stuff, see if you have any of this.
Australian Open trophy from 91, 96 and a 1989 Davis Cup.
Yeah.
Then please return to Boris. Let's be honest. Let's get Boris back on his feet.
Yeah, come on. Let's help him.
Yeah, Larry Nassar. Have you heard of this guy?
Nope.
Oh, serial pedophile, horrible individual. He basically was in charge of the U.S. Olympic gymnasts. All these young girls who are all like 12, 13, 14, 15, whatever it is. He was already kind of charged with 60 years because of possession of child pornography. Well, he's now up to 175 years because 160 of his victims came forward. They all testified, and he is now, that's it, he's gone. But the judge, wow, this woman was not, she went pretty hard on this dude. The judge dismissed his attempt of apology at the end as insincere and said, be in darkness the rest of your life.
God.
She then went on to add that as much as it was my honor and privilege to hear the sisters' survivors, as in like testimonies, it is my honor and privilege to sentence you. Because, sir, you do not deserve to walk outside of a prison ever again.
God, well, that's the truth. There's a judge who's actually saying the right thing.
She then went on, because he's like sniveling, all that kind of stuff, she went on to say, you have not earned yet what you have done. I wouldn't send my dog to you. I've just signed your death warrant. And this is what she said while she sentenced him.
Wow.
Yeah, this guy, I mean, an absolute creep. I mean, it was so bad that the U.S. Olympic Federation came under fire for actually having this guy in their employment. He just looks like a pedophile, a dreadful, dreadful guy, and he just, you know, I mean, absolute predator.
So there's some accountability. They needed the court to step in, but eventually, you know, he got his just desserts. Good.
175 years, so basically...
175.
And the thing about pedophiles, they don't have the best time in prison.
No.
Oh, well,
allegedly.
Yes, no, they don't deserve it, Shem.
But, the guy can, he can rot in hell. That's pretty much your sports. Nice little cheery end. It's cricket today, 10 o'clock. Don't miss it.
All right. Thank you, Ben. Some cryptocurrency news in case you're watching that. Ethereum currently trading at $1,086.75. The Bitcoin price is at $11,499, so not much upward movement there. A little bit, but not a lot. And if you care about Ripple, 1.349. Hovering somewhere around about there at the moment. So nothing hugely exciting to talk about in cryptocurrencies. No massive ups, no massive downs, which I suppose some people would be very grateful for. Some people would be very relieved about that.
I would just love to know the sort of fallout for those people in December that were cashing in their bonuses for cryptos.
Yeah.
Because you know it was going to happen.
Yeah.
There was all that upward turn. Everyone's like, well, how can it possibly go down?
Well, I reckon there are a lot of people who are sitting now hoping it's going to turn around because they've put all their money into this, or they've put some of their money into this. And if it doesn't turn around, they're going to be in big trouble. Because it's not now that that starts to become a problem. It's like 2 or 3 months down the line when they need to use that money for something. Just a quickie. This is important. If you haven't already voted in our One Plan Pet Parade competition, you can go along and have a look at that. Ben is up there with Meowsers. How are you doing with Meowsers, Ben? In terms of votes, do you have any idea?
Gareth, look, if I finish on the podium, I'll be happy. But I know that we're not going to win.
You don't think so?
No.
Even though Meowsers is so cute?
She is. She's absolutely adorable. She's amazing. But unfortunately, star power always wins, and I can't compete.
With who?
With you and Carl.
Oh, right. Good. It's good to be the king. All right. Carl had a haircut.
Carl, look, I must say, Carl looks smug in that picture.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He is. He's very smug.
So, I mean, let me show
you Carl's new haircut.
I'm not going to be too sad because, you know, deep down, I think we're winners.
Yes. No, absolutely.
And we always will be.
Yeah, sure. There's nothing about you and Meowsers that you need to be upset about. Carl had a haircut.
Yeah, look, so he's extra smug he looks now.
Look,
it's almost like he saw the views on the page. He's like, yep.
No, he's feeling particularly full of himself. But go along and vote. And remember, you can also send your pet pics in. All you have to do is join the competition. All the details are up on Pet Parade on cliffcentral.com. And remember, all you have to do is tag it, hashtag Pet Parade, and make sure that you put the Cliff Central tag on there as well, at cliffcentral.com. Now, here's an interesting finding about pets. According to a 2011 study, owning a pet may protect children from developing pet allergies later on in life. Because you kind of get their immune system working early. And that children who grow up with pets are also more emotionally intelligent and empathetic, more responsible, and may know how to express themselves better.
I like that.
Yeah. We need to look after our pets. They're important and deserve the best medical care. With One Plan Pet Insurance, you can claim for a vet visit before you even see the vet. Ensure the health of your pets from as little as 133 Rand a month. Just SMS the word CLIFF, CLIFF, to 31644 now, and One Plan will call you back. SMS CLIFF to 31644. And remember to vote in the hashtag Pet Parade competition on cliffcentral.com. Over to you, Sia. It's time for Said by Sia.
This morning, wherever you are, I just want you to make a note of this name, Jesse Casanova. Firstly, he gets extra points just for having a cool name.
What a great name.
But secondly, he is a person you want to know in the near future. He's a young, talented South African who has just casually sold 49% of his new app for $2.8 million.
You're kidding.
In funding.
And what's his app?
Jesse Casanova, yeah, and will be visiting Silicon Valley to launch it.
What is his app?
So it's called Omega, O-M-E-G-A-H, and he took to Facebook to announce that 49% of his new app has been sold for 44 million rands. He's a young entrepreneur who had been working on the app for most of 2017, and it seems like his hard work is finally paying off. For now, he can only reveal that the app is 3 months before launch, as everything around it is super sensitive now. Wow. That there's this, you know,
so we don't even know what he does.
Not at all. Like, how super amazing is this now that, you know, he has 44 million rands in the bank, and he could only describe the app as the next generation social media app. When you visit the Facebook page of the app, all that we find out from there is that they describe the app as here to make you feel more conscious, inspired, empowered and motivated, and to help you ultimately figure out and choose to live life good. So Jesse and his Omega team will be competing against Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, etc. next year for the next generation social media app. So look, to Jesse and the rest of the team, congratulations. I think for a South African company to be making such amazing moves is incredible. And for also getting a pretty penny in your bank account as well. $2.8 million, over 44 million rands.
Yeah, but that's in funding, jeez, remember? So yeah, it's not like he's going to pocket that money.
Hey, yeah. So visiting
going to go straight
Silicon
into developing
Valley
the app. But that's good. Well done to him.
Yeah.
All right,
Jesse
so
Casanova.
It's a new social media type of app. Mm. All right. Interesting stuff.
Let's
we'll
see
keep
what happens
eye
there. Exactly.
You might have missed it yesterday, but this week, in fact, on Tuesday, Bhumihlabo looked at disruption from a healthcare angle. How will the fourth industrial revolution impact the healthcare industry and the use of social media as a tool? He chats to a guy who's passionate about changing the state of healthcare in South Africa to help ensure that good healthcare is not only available to those who can afford it. That's all on this week's edition of Disrupt. It's powered by T-Systems South Africa, and you can find it, as you can all the good stuff, on cliffcentral.com. All right, still to come, we've got Nathan Reddy popping in later on to talk about the state of advertising and design and the whole creative world in South Africa and exactly what's going on there. He's one of the foremost shining lights in South African advertising. He's been around for a long, long time. He's got a brilliant business called Grid. And then later on, we will talk to David Hertz, who's the chairman of Worksmen's Attorneys. Why? Because I've always been fascinated how these huge firms of attorneys work. What does a chairman do? How does he make decisions about who to hire? How does he run the operation? Which cases do they decide they're absolutely not going to touch? And which cases do they get involved in?
Oh, yeah, good question.
And you know, what if the Guptas came to you with like R1 billion and said to you, we're in huge shit.
Apparently, that's only how Guptas enter rooms.
Yeah, with throw your legal minds at this problem and help us get out of the shit. Would you, as the chairman of a major law firm, would you be tempted by the money? Would you do what you had to get that R1 billion out of the Guptas? Or would you turn and run because you know it's not a good idea? What would you do, Sia?
Hey, that's where this little thing called ethics comes into play. And you need that, I think.
Yeah. Cash flow also. That's
well, I think you can be ethical and still be in business.
Yeah. So what would you do, Ben?
See, but this is the thing about corruption is that it's every single level of life. No one's above it. I just think that if you're good enough at what you do, you'll always be able to find work. So I would say, rather than risking your business, I mean, how is KPMG going to bounce back? Mm. With massive difficulty.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, it's not going to be a bounce back. It's going to be like a,
you know, I just,
climbing.
Yeah, I just think when in doubt in life, try not to take the low road or, you know, the easiest thing.
Yeah. Well, listen to this interview. I think you'll find it interesting. David Hertz, he popped in yesterday. He's the chairman of Worksmen's Attorneys. Find out how these big firms, and there are five massive law firms in South Africa who are like the giants in the legal profession, and he is the chairman of one of them. And I think you'd be fascinated, even if you're not in the law, to know how these things work. And apart from that, he's a hell of a character. Like, you know, some people in law have massive personalities. I know when you think of lawyers, sometimes you think of just, you know, the kind of caricature that people used to draw of lawyers. But I know a lot of them, and some of them are among the most intelligent, interesting, funny, clever, creative people. And you wouldn't think it when you think of law. But you have to think like that if you want to be a good lawyer. If you're not a creative thinker in law, you're just basically processing information. And a computer can do that, as we know. Soon computers will replace a lot of us. The ones that they won't replace, the creative ones. So today, two creative people, the chairman of Worksmen's Attorneys, and Nathan Reddy joining us at about 7:30. We'll get to some news in a little while. And here's a quick message. This is from someone who says, hey, I was listening to you guys yesterday morning and I heard about the corgis. I'm a corgi owner and he is the cutest, sweetest puppy ever. I guess I just got lucky. Thanks for the best show. You guys are amazing. So that corgi has not eaten anybody today.
Yet.
Yeah. My sister has a corgi.
Oh, no.
Water zombies outside my little shopping center. The Pick n Pay was out of water, and this is a water shop. It's people lining up for water in Cape Town. No matter what the state of the pitch is, people, with Ben at the forefront, we will find a way to bitch about it. Just enjoy the cricket. It's great. Quinton.
What are you getting at, Quinton?
Just think that Kim Jong-un would love to have all those messed up ministers we have in South Africa. I mean, he's had his own uncle killed by a tank machine gun and had people eaten by dogs. Now, that is what should happen to these ministers. That would be awesome. These people make me sick. Hey, Gareth and team, there's been cases of people moving to North Korea voluntarily, if I remember correctly. There was a Japanese soccer player who moved to North Korea to play for them during the 2010 World Cup. He was even spotted to be crying during the national anthem before one of his games. I think his name is Jong Tae-se. Okay, well, you know, the fact that you actually know the name of the one person who defected to North Korea shows you how rare it is. Check the BitConnect scam. They scam people out of $1 billion and then disappeared. Oh, and the YouTube video is amazing, Jared. I will check that out. Thank you, Jared. All right, when we come back, some news and a whole lot of other stuff with Mubs. And you can call us on 0861-555-189. And also WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090.
This is CliffCentral.com.